This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And in just a bit, we'll hear from Councilman Matt Watson. He's been touting a proposal that would increase pay for police officers in the parish, but it would be involving a property tax increase, and many council people are weighing this with some trepidation. We'll talk with Matt Watson about what happens tonight as the council convenes in East Baton Rouge Parish. Also, journalists John Camp, Phil Oakley, and Bob Courtney on what happened in Baton Rouge on this date 46 years ago, January 10th, 1972, the North Boulevard riot, a deadly riot that was national news at the time. We'll talk about them, and also John Kennedy on gun regulation measures that are floating in Congress. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. It was on this date 38 years ago that Bo Ryan, the LSU football coach, perished in a plane crash just 42 days after taking the job. He was on his way from Shreveport to Baton Rouge when his plane suddenly started veering eastward and ultimately crashed in the Atlantic Ocean, flying by Raleigh, North Carolina, where his wife and two daughters were sleeping. He had left North Carolina State to become the head coach at LSU, and Robert Bo Ryan was dead at the age of 34, and that resulted in the hiring of Jerry Lane Stovall as head coach at LSU. The death of Bo Ryan on January 10th, 1980. January 10th, 1972 is remembered in this city for the North Boulevard riot, and it was covered nationally and for good reason, and we'll talk about what happened in Baton Rouge on this date 46 years ago, later in the hour, with Phil Oakley and John Camp and Bob Courtney. And they will be here as reminders of the past. They covered that event 46 years ago. Tonight, the Metro Council is meeting, and it could be a lively meeting. Matt Watson, District 11 representative, member of the council, is with us, and he has been touting a proposal for boosting pay for East Baton Rouge Parish police officers. It would involve a property tax, and it is, as you can imagine, a proposal that has some opposition and quite likely will have difficulty getting 8 votes. And Matt Watson, I think he knows that he's going against the grain when he's proposing this, but he has been steadfast in saying it's a good idea, and he's here to make the case whether it wins or loses, and chances are this is not the night. But Matt Watson, why is this a necessity in your view?
Well, I'll tell you, I began my work for a police raise because there was an emergency in our city. We were well short of police officers allocated. We were losing officers every month to retirement, moving to other areas that were paying them what they're worth. I heard our head of finance state that it was cheaper to pay overtime for police officers than to hire new police officers, even though we were losing them at a decent rate. But most importantly, at the time that I started this, we were at 64 homicides. And I think at this point we would we don't want to have homicides, but we'd love to have that have
64
been
for 2017.
Back at the end of August when I was starting
we
to talk to
us. We finished at 104, 106.
104, okay. 106, and we can talk semantics about a person who was shot in 2017 that passed in 2018. But either way, anything over 100, anything over 1 is detriment to our community and certainly a detriment to that family that's got to make funeral arrangements. So we had, police morale was low. We had police that felt they couldn't proactively police because any engagement that they would have with a community that turned into a scuffle. And whenever you have one officer engaging one person, you have a much higher rate for use of force. If you've got enough police officers where you can have another one in the area also show up to have a conversation with someone rather than a one-on-one with somebody who is, may have already been active in a violent situation, is, you know, move that violence onto the officer as well. These officers felt they were in a situation, many that I've spoke to personally, felt that in this, the air of our community right now, that they felt that they were the ones handcuffed that couldn't proactively police. And I wanted to make sure that, one, we came up with a way to have the money to get the officers that we need. We're down 60 now. We keep losing officers, but we 2018 certainly not slowing down the homicide rate from 2017. We've already had unfortunate incidents already happen just this month, and we're not even at the close of this month. So I wanted to, we've got to raise morale of the police officers to know that the elected officials have their back. We want to have more officers out there to be on the streets so that we can handle crime. I wanted them to feel that they could safely, proactively police, because that's how you prevent crime, rather than show up and take notes on a crime that's already happened.
Your number is 877-217-5757, wherever you are, and locally 297-5633. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. For Councilman Matt Watson, District 11, his proposal would amount to about a $160 a year increase in property tax for someone with an average home in Baton Rouge, which would be about $200,000 in value. So $160 a year for an increase in police pay. And this would be an increase, but still would leave us behind many other municipalities. And you've stated before, Matt, that Baton Rouge is probably about two-thirds, and that may be...
We're very close to the bottom 10th percentile in the nation.
But two-thirds of what New Orleans, for
example? Orleans at 40... The state police at $46,600.
This is starting pay.
Starting pay. New Orleans... is closer to $40,000 in pay, and I'm sure that, you know, I wish the very best to our new police chief, but he knows full well his experience in the state police, how things changed in state police recruiting ability when they got their big raise that happened some years ago. He was present for that, and I just saw on the news the other day that, you know, they're very proud that they've got two academies that are overlapping in the time of the academy, one of 50, I believe, and one of 60, and we had an academy of 33 and 35.
Well, what is our starting pay in Baton Rouge now?
$32,979.
Okay, so we're significantly behind other places.
Certainly.
And more like three-fourths of New Orleans, but still, it's an issue. And does that make it difficult to recruit?
I would think so. The police officers that I speak to are saying that they see some repeat individuals that have come back to try to get in the academy numerous times. Some have had to have go and get... some things taken off their record, really had to go get criminal offenses taken off their record so they could come back and be police officers. And I'm all for people coming out of making a mistake in their youth and coming back and being productive members of society. But when we've got folks that we've got to turn away because they don't have the ability, they've got violent records possibly, or they have to get something literally expunged from their record so they can come back. And these are the people that are seeing $32,979 as a pay rate that they're willing to go risk their lives every day. I'd like to see more people than necessary apply to the academy so that we could be choosy. I would imagine every business would like to have more applicants than positions open so they could see what's out there, make decisions on who they think would best be their best and brightest in a community to choose from, not just the folks that have to make arrangements to even be able to apply.
877-217-5757. We'll go to the phone lines in short order with Matt Watson, District 11 council member, and tonight the Metro Council meets, and it is expected to be a tough sell for Matt Watson. Now, you've been lobbying council members, and of course, I would imagine it puts some of them who are against taxes also in a box because they don't want to be against the police.
Certainly.
And this not only would be an increase for starting members, it'd be an increase across the board.
You cannot just give a raise to just those folks who are starting out. You have to retain good officers because it's almost a running joke, and it's not a funny one, that we are police university for Louisiana, that we spend a lot of time and a lot of man hours and a lot of resources training police officers, and once we train them, they can move on to other municipalities that reward those individuals with commensurate pay. And they can do so because they don't have to make the investment in training because we're willing to do that for them.
Why is this such a tough sell?
Well, knowing that there are great numbers of residents that maintain an ardent anti-tax philosophy, and there are others that many of the same folks and others that don't trust government in general and certainly have told me there's members of council they don't trust, and some just flat out say they don't trust the mayor's ability to keep what money that she has in the budget for police mm-hmm. right now, that their fear, and a legitimate one that council would have to watch, is that if we pass an 8-mil property tax to create money for police benefits mm-hmm. and salary, that there would be a movement of money allocated in the general fund to other projects, and therefore actually reducing police pay in the long run, or maintaining the same pay they've got right now and being used as this tax to free up dollars to be moved to somewhere else. And that's a worry of both folks that are calling my colleagues, calling me certainly. I get plenty of calls to that effect as well. So I imagine it's mm-hmm. it's a tough decision to be against law enforcement and also be against taxes when, you know, and we've talked about this before, that the executive branch of this parish produces a budget in November that has to be decided on by 12 members of very different areas of the parish by December 12th. If they don't come up with a plan to change the budget that's unified, that budget that the mayor's provided passes automatically anyway. So you have to get 8 members of council to find places where money might exist to move, agree on where those places are, how much money, and agree on where to go for there to be any change in the budget.
Matt Watson is with us for another segment, District 11 council member for East Baton Rouge Parish. Tonight the council meets, and it's expected to be a tough sell for Matt Watson to get 8 votes for an increase in police pay. We'll talk about it. We're back after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to WRKF 89.3. This is Talk Louisiana, and our guest for another segment is Matt Watson, District 11 councilman. He is voting proposing, it may not even come to a vote, but he is proposing a measure that would be an increase in pay for police officers. You say the starting officer starts at $32,900 and some odd dollars in Baton Rouge. What would this bring it to if it were to pass?
Well, if we've started the step two, where all officers start when they come out of academy, move that from move from $32,979 to $40,800 and change.
All right, so right at the rate for New Orleans, 877-217-5757, and also talk at talklouisiana.org. Here's one from Christina asking about the new chief. Murphy Paul, your thoughts about the hire that the mayor-president made this week?
Well, I think he's I have not got a chance to speak with him directly. I obviously ran into him and shook his hand at the mayor's State of the City Parish address that she made. I was present yesterday when he was sworn in. I haven't had a chance to talk to him. He has a flurry of activity around him wherever he mm-hmm. goes. So at some point, I imagine today at some point, I will get a chance to chit-chat with him about all things police. I think he's a wonderful candidate. I think he's a very talented police officer, certainly of the pool of people that were brought before the committee that discussed mm-hmm. you know, moving forward as choosing one of those individuals as chief. I think he's right at the top of that list. And I'll tell you, like anybody, I want him to succeed, because certainly no one hopes for anyone to fall on their face when we've got problems moving forward. I think his choice of Mac Tweedy and Johnny to be, these are wonderful police officers, been with us for a long time, to be deputy chiefs. These are wonderful guys that know the rank and file officers, understand what we're facing as a community, and can be wonderful in translating both the community concerns, the rank and file officer concerns, to the new chief while he's in a transition of really getting into place and knowing exactly where all the pieces are.
All right, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Maria in East Baton Rouge asks if the pay raise will affect police, or would affect police who are on paid leave, the raise.
Well, I would imagine it probably would. That's, you're going to look at the police and fire civil service system and their requirements. Obviously, we also have to look at the fact that where the executive branch, whom I hope is moving mm-hmm. in a direction to finalize a contract with the police union. I've not heard of any positive movement or any movement at all in that. So that would be something that would have to be taken up with the executive branch and in her discussions with the police union.
And here's another question from John in New Roads asking about the increase in homicides in East Baton Rouge Parish, 62 in 2016 and 104, 106 in 2017. What happened?
I tell you what, if I had that answer to it, I'd be making a whole lot more money than I'm making right now, and certainly the problem would have been mm-hmm. solved if I had that answer to that question. Right now, we've got problems in our community where people choose violence as a solution. And I'll tell you, I don't see violence as having mm-hmm. solved anything. Certainly, it doesn't stop a movement of people who want to see some kind of change, you know, someone who wants to make a shot at someone who may be a leader of that. If something's a movement of any worth, the members of that movement will keep moving forward. Certainly, if we've got problems with drugs in our community, we all know that if one drug dealer or someone else that's got a problem with a drug dealer gets shot, someone else is going to take that person's place, unfortunately, or there's going to be other people who are just fed up and will still report on a crime. So violence has never – any one instance of violence or even series of violence never really changes anything. It just makes the process of moving us forward to a better community just that much sad.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you're on the air with Matt Watson. Hi, Phil. You're welcome to talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. I need to ask a dumb question here. And as far as where the parish gets its revenue, I know that somebody has proposed, that the columnist in Today's Advocate proposed putting the sales tax back in to help with that, with our budget shortfall. Would a gasoline tax be like a better option, or is that something that would be available to the city parish budget?
Well, if you passed a gasoline tax like Steve Carter worked so hard for to get at least something to bring the gas tax up to consumer price index, that was a very tough sell to begin with. If we move to a regional gas tax so that it would keep the money in a certain area, no matter how large that area is, that money, because it's tied to gasoline sales and vehicle usage, would be probably earmarked for transportation projects, and I think you'd probably get some folks pretty up in arms if that money was used for anything else.
Thank you, Phil. Kevin in Lafayette. Hi, Kevin. You're on Talk Louisiana with Matt Watson.
Hi. My question was if there's any plan for any corresponding raises in the standards that would go along with this increase in pay, because my concern or my position on that would be that, you know, I'd be willing to pay much higher taxes to raise police pay if there was some assurance that would increase the quality of the average officer. Because I think there's a lot of evidence that shows, for instance, when police officers have to have four-year degrees, that use of force incidents and, you know, lawsuits go way down. And I was just wondering if there's, you know, is this going to be an increase in pay that is going to keep all the same standards in place, or is there anything the police department is going to do, you know, in consideration of that?
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for the question. I think you point at something that is exactly something that I would hope that an increase in police pay would solve. For starters, you're not going to get, I would imagine, unless you've got someone who wants to do some it almost volunteer work for their community, to have spent the money and in so many cases have a hefty loan when they get out of college to repay, to go take a job that's $32,979. They may not be able to afford to pay their living expenses and pay back their student loan in so many cases at that salary. So if you could raise the police pay, I think you can attract more people who have post-secondary education, whether it be an associate's degree or a four-year degree. I would love to see down the road that we've got a situation where people who come in with especially foreign language ability, not a postgraduate degree necessarily, but a bachelor's degree. So many other things that make them more competent or have much more life experience as they go out into the world, and even more maturity. You have someone who goes into the police academy at 18 and a half years old after high school versus someone who enters at 21 plus years after college is a different person who's got a little bit more life experience and maybe a more well-rounded person when they go out and approach people who are different than the community that they grew up in. Because you're going to see all walks of life, I imagine, in being a police officer. And I think you can attract those people with a higher pay, and no matter how high you raise the standards, you cannot get people that you're describing to go to work for that amount of pay. And to take it to when Councilwoman Banks Daniel was trying to limit those people who could become police officers to just the area inside the city of Baton Rouge, you can limit it to that, but all you've really done is said no to people outside the city or outside the parish that want to go work for this pay amount that we currently have and serve the people of Baton Rouge. It's not going to increase the number of people in Baton Rouge who want to become police officers.
All right. We're short on time, Matt, but if you don't have the votes, will you consider withdrawing the proposal?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I have to be a representative of those people that put me in the situation that I'm blessed to be in as being a council person, and so does every other council member. And I think this is already a success in so much as we've seen a commitment to purchase new vehicles, and we've got a new police chief who, part of his speech that he is going to give in introducing himself, that he mentions higher pay raise. So we've got the executive branch to at least move the needle as well.
Thank you, Matt Watson. Best of luck to you. We're back after this pause on 89.3 WRKF with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Your numbers again, locally in the Baton Rouge area, 297-5633. Anywhere, the number toll-free is 877-217-5757. You could send an email, if you prefer, to talk@talklouisiana.org. In just a bit, we're going to hear from John Camp, Phil Oakley, and also Bob Courtney, I think, will be joining us to discuss what happened in our city 46 years ago with the North Boulevard riot, a day that many young people may not be cognizant of, but others who lived here, and it was before I moved here, it was one of the most vivid days in the history of Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757. A bipartisan bill aimed at strengthening the country's firearms background check system will face a no vote from U.S. Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana. John Neely Kennedy announced his opposition yesterday, saying he suspected he might be the only dissenting vote on the proposed legislation. Republicans John Cornyn of Texas and Tim Scott of South Carolina are sponsoring the legislation, along with Democratic Senators Chris Murphy and Richard Blumenthal, both of Connecticut. The bill's provisions are aimed at strengthening the national instant background check system by offering bonuses to federal agencies that provide information to the system and grants for states to upload information. Here was our junior senator, John Neely Kennedy, Republican from Zachary, on Fox News with Stuart Varney.
You're opposed to a gun control bill that toughens background checks and, I believe, threatens federal agencies which don't properly report their workers' criminal offenses. Now, why do you oppose that bill?
Well, you're correct. There's a new gun bill in front of the Senate and the House. Look, I don't think we need more gun control. I think we need more idiot control. I mean, here's what the background check says. It's law, and I support it. If you've committed a felony, if you committed domestic violence, if you're an illegal alien, if you're mentally ill, if you have a dishonorable discharge from the military, you're not entitled to own a gun. And I support that. The issue is how to enforce it. Now, this new bill tells the state and federal bureaucrats that we'll give you more money and we'll ask you pretty please with sugar on top if you'll start reporting to the national database. The bureaucrats aren't reporting this stuff. That's what happened in Sutherland Heights, Texas. I think that the state and federal employees already have an incentive. It's called a job. And the problem with this place, Stuart, is nobody ever gets fired. And I don't support throwing more money at this problem. I support firing the people who aren't inputting this data into the database.
Okay. Senator Kennedy, always plain spoken and direct and to the point, and we appreciate it.
The push for this legislation came after a lone gunman, Devin Patrick Kelly, killed 26 people in a Baptist church in rural Texas this past November. Kelly previously had been court-martialed by the U.S. Air Force, sentenced to a year in jail, and drummed out of the service for assaulting his wife and child, a conviction that should have prohibited him from purchasing a weapon. But the Air Force never passed information about Kelly's conviction to the background check system, which is administered by the FBI. Senator Kennedy says that Air Force officials are investigating the incident and have not provided any information to Congress about who was to blame for the failure. He touted his pro-gun rights bona fides in criticizing the bill, but saved most of his fire, as you heard, for federal and state bureaucrats. So Senator John Kennedy touting his Second Amendment beliefs. And today, the governor of Louisiana will be with us for his monthly show, a week early this time. He usually does it the third Wednesday of the month, but John Bell Edwards will be with us today at 2 o'clock right here on WRKF for Ask the Governor. And we look forward to hearing from the governor about various issues. And if you have something on your mind, this is an opportunity to talk with the governor of Louisiana. It was on this date in 1972 that the North Boulevard riot occurred, an infamous riot in our community. Armed riot troops remained garrisoned in the city a day after the event, and it was reported with earnest by the newspaper of record, the New York Times. This is a story from January 12th, actually, 2 days after the North Boulevard riot, saying armed riot troops are garrisoned in Baton Rouge as racial tensions mounted following a shootout in the streets that killed two white policemen and two black militants and left 31 people injured. Part of the tension appeared to stem from conflicting accounts as to whether militants were armed when the police opened fire in the noontime confrontation. The Times continues, adding to the controversy has been the inability of the police to produce any weapons that the militants allegedly used against them. However, the city remained quiet under a curfew. The shooting broke out in the police lines. High police officials have maintained when one of the 18 blacks who had blocked a street in the city's central black section pulled a pistol from his jacket. It's interesting, the wording in the Times story would probably not be the same today as it was then. The volleys that followed in the next minute left two of the militants dead in the rain-slick street, killed two plainclothes detectives, and wounded 31 other persons, including four policemen. Captain Brian Clemens of the Sheriff's Department said the confrontation started as a fist fight until the militant pulled out the pistol and was cut down by a barrage of police buckshot. That was how it was in Baton Rouge in 1972, and one of those who was reporting on this was none other than John Camp, the veteran Peabody Award-winning journalist who's worked in many places, including CNN. And John Camp, do you recall 1972, January 10th, very well?
Very much. I had just returned to WJBO after a year's exile, after I had auditioned for Skid Row in New Orleans. And before leaving, I had been news director and talk show host, but Phil Oakley had replaced me. And when I returned, he had asked me to do a show in his place because he had some conflict. And so I was doing our talk show, and a disc jockey came strolling into the room, and he handed me a piece of paper with no comment, turned around and walked out. I looked at it. It said, Mayor Woody Dumas has declared an emergency in Baton Rouge with a curfew, et cetera. And I looked at this thing, and I said, what the heck is this? And so I went to commercial. I asked the DJ, Jim McKay, I says, what is this? He says, I don't know. I picked up that red phone in the back when it rang, and this is what they told me. Hmm. So that was my first hint of what was going on. Phil happened to be out of the station, and he would become one of our on-the-street reporters. It was really a remarkable return to Baton Rouge, or to WJBO, after being out for a year.
All right, let's go to Phil Oakley, who John Camp mentioned. Phil was reporting on this 46 years ago today. Phil, what happened when you arrived on the scene?
Well, it was terrible. It was one of the worst sights I've ever witnessed in my life. And John McKithen, I think, had the quote of the day. He was still governor at that time. He called it a sad, dreadful day. And that's exactly what it was. It was a very rainy day. I had heard there were going to be some Muslims from Chicago, and that really didn't make much sense in Baton Rouge in 1972. It wasn't black Muslims were known to people in other places, but the notion that they were going to do something in Baton Rouge just didn't add up, and I didn't understand why they were going to be there. But I quickly finished my lunch and had been told to be on North Boulevard for about noon, and actually I got there a little late. A big part of the shooting had happened at 12:15, and I got there just a few minutes later. There was still shooting, but it was terrible, and there were bodies all over the street, people in handcuffs lying on the street and the sidewalk. Baton Rouge Police Chief Eddie Bauer had been seriously wounded, and he was walking around virtually in a daze trying to maintain his command posture. The chief deputy of East Baton Rouge Parish, Fritz Sleiman, had been seriously injured. He, too, was trying to carry on, but it wasn't going very well. State police had just gotten a helicopter at that time, first one they'd ever had, and it was flying over, and it was a war zone. Mm-hmm. It was terrible. North Boulevard was changed from a peaceful part of our community into a bloodbath in just a matter of minutes.
And for those unfamiliar, this was where the old Tabby's Blues Box and the Temple Mount were located. I drive by there frequently and think about what happened 46 years ago. Did you feel like you were in danger, Phil?
I didn't have any trouble figuring that out at all. This was long before cell phones, and people don't realize how different communications were back then. But I had to get to a telephone to start calling in reports. And there was still sporadic gunfire. It wasn't a constant barrage, but there were pops from sounded like small pistol reports very frequently. And I started into the barber shop, which was right there in the Temple Theater complex, and there were wounded people on the floor, and there was blood all over the place. And so I went right next door. And a fellow named Reed Canada, who was one of the then leaders of the black community in Baton Rouge in a political sense, invited me in, but he was in the back. He just said, come on in and keep down. And he let me use the phone. And after a few moments, I did the first report and assured people that things were calming down on the street. And I went back outside and ran into Al Crouch and several other journalists, I think mostly from The Advocate. There were people all over the place. And there were lots of youngsters, teenagers, who were running around
All right, hold tight. We do have to take a break, but we'll return and hear more after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and we continue our discussion about what occurred in this city where we are located 46 years ago today. Two policemen and two militants and 31, they were killed. And 31 others, at least 31, injured. The New York Times and many other national outlets, in fact, all other national outlets, were converging on Baton Rouge at this time 46 years ago. And on the scene was Phil Oakley, the reporter that we just heard from, and John Camp, who was on the air at the time this occurred. And the technology was much different in those days. And in just a bit, we'll hear from Bob Courtney. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757 or 297-5633. Elwin from District 6. Elwin, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Fine.
That's good. My reason for calling in this past Sunday, January the 7th, on 60 Minutes, Chicago has some program. I called the mayor and gave the information. I've forgotten the name of it, where they are alleging that murders are down by 21%. And I thought if someone in Baton Rouge would look into that and see if it can be implemented, that we could save a lot of debts.
All right. Well, that might be something worth doing. And we live in a violent city now, and we're talking about what happened in 1972. Was Baton Rouge as violent then as it is now, John Camp?
I don't believe so. No, obviously not. I mean, this was why it was such a significant event on North Street or North Boulevard, because no one had ever expected that to happen. There were, you know, normal murders. You know, in talking with Phil, it was interesting, and he did when he was talking about Reed, Canada, and he recalls probably one of the most significant sound bites that told more about that than anything. Do you recall that, Phil?
Reed, Canada?
Reed said, after Bob Johnson had been very seriously injured, and Henry Baptiste as well. He said, I don't know what happened after that, because I was on the back, in the back on the floor, taking care of business, because bullets have no friends.
Bullets have no friends, one of the great cuts.
Well, you mentioned Bob Johnson, who was a cameraman for WBRZ, where Bob Courtney worked for many years, and I don't think he was at WBRZ on this day. But he was a journalist in the city. And Bob, before we get to where you were at the time of the carnage in North Boulevard, what do you remember about Bob Johnson and his legacy as far as doing his job and almost losing his life on this day while he was covering the event?
Well, Jim, what I remember about Bob Johnson was that he was really a true gentleman, and there were a couple of figures who worked in television when I was working in radio that I really looked up to, and Bob Johnson was one of them. He always seemed to be cool, even tempered. He was intelligent. He was a great anchorman and a terrific reporter.
Well, he lived a long time after this terrible incident, and is noted by Phil and John. He was with Henry Baptiste, and we tried to reach Henry today, and hopefully at some point we'll get his account of what happened. But those two men almost died.
That's correct, and I think a third person there was Maurice Cockrum, who was a photographer and a reporter at the time, who was also with them on that day. He has since passed away. But it was a chilling day and an incredible circumstance that took place down there, that the people who were down there, who went down there early, did not really know what they were getting into.
I think you were a young lad of about 23, early in your career, and where were you on this day, Bob?
Well, it's really kind of funny. That was... It's one reason why I will always remember my very first day on the job at WJBO, where I worked with Phil and John Camp, because that was my first day on the job. And Phil had asked me to go and cover, the night before, he had asked me to go and cover a Edwin Edwards press conference at the Prince Murat Inn, because, as you recall, at the time, the general election wasn't until February, and he was in a general election runoff, so to speak, with Dave Treen. And there was a press conference, so I went to it. And as I was sitting there, people had pagers. I did not, but pagers started going off, and people started leaving the press conference. And at some point, someone came in and spoke to Edwards, and he basically said to us, I guess the rest of you would probably want to leave because there's a riot in downtown Baton Rouge. So I immediately went to WJBO studios on Florida Street, where I remained, I think, for about 36 hours.
Well, and to put it in perspective, that's probably a half mile from where this was occurring. Not far.
That's correct. And it was kind of a scary travel because at that point I had no knowledge of what was going on, and I flipped on the radio in my car as I went along, and of course I picked up the WJBO broadcast that was underway, and Phil was already on the scene, and I think John Camp was in the control room.
All right. Well, Phil, you were there, and as you noted, you had to use a real telephone. There were no cell phones. Fortunately, you found one. It was in the barbershop, right?
No, it was in Reed Canada's office.
Okay, I got you.
He had a political organization, and I've forgotten the name of it, but it was a very different Baton Rouge. And a lot of the early information I got from him, you mentioned Henry Baptiste. He was really the hero of the day, so far as I was concerned, because he single-handedly saved Bob Johnson's life, even though Henry was seriously hurt as well. He got him off the street. There was a mob that apparently chased him as Henry literally carried him through an alley to his own car and took him to the hospital. And it was a remarkable act of heroism.
And also notable in that this is 1972, and this was a black man rescuing a white man.
That's right. And white faces who weren't police officers were in short supply on North Boulevard in those first few minutes. I'd never felt like I was targeted, but I kept having police officers whom I knew tell me to get out, get back, get out of the way. Mm-hmm. And they were quite concerned for my safety. And I was basically in shock. I was just walking around on adrenaline. I want to mention the names of the two sheriff's deputies who were killed. One was Ralph Hancock. He was 30 years old at the time of his death. And the other was Ralph Wilder, who was 27. These officers had no more idea what they were walking into on that day than I did. One of the things I learned early on, first from Reed and later from Henry Baptiste, when he came back to the scene, was that this group of black Muslims from Chicago had apparently been sent by Elijah Muhammad himself. We didn't know that at the time, but apparently so. And they had several meetings at the Temple Theater. It was a Masonic lodge that had a big room upstairs over the theater building. And they had been gathering people up and telling them that the world was theirs and they were going to take over at noon on January 10th. Well, Henry had actually been to one of these meetings, I think, and he had no idea what they were talking about.
All right. We're short on time, but John Camp, what was it like in the days and weeks after this?
Well, at the time, of course, this was when I converted from daily reporter to investigative reporter. One of the people we need to mention that was updating us was Robert Collins.
All right.
He was the lady of the Lake Hospital.
We're short on time. I want to know what it was like right after this occurred.
Oh, this was absolutely we didn't know one thing or another, but we did a tremendous job of getting information to the viewers, and it was a scary situation for everybody that was involved because we had not seen anything like that, and a lot of us were just saying, what next, what next? And we ended up winning a bunch of awards for.
Well, and Bob, as far as going by that area where you still congregate, work nearby, when you go by there, do you still think about what happened on this date 46 years ago? Okay, I think maybe we lost Bob. But John Camp, thank you for joining us today. And certainly this is a day that anybody who was alive on that day in Baton Rouge will long remember. And Phil Oakley, you've moved away, but it's still vivid to you. And until tomorrow, we will visit later today, if you're near a radio at 2 o'clock, with the governor of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards. The Ask the Governor show will be with us at 2 o'clock this afternoon. And tomorrow we'll be back same time, same place. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.